Genesis 48 to 50. Well, Jacob got there in the end. When he was 77 and he was running away in fear of his life from Esau, and he comes to Bethel, he says to God, "If Yahweh will bring me back to my father's house in peace, then Yahweh will be my God and I will give a tenth to him. And you gave a tenth to your king." So he was not accepting that Yahweh was his God. And all the way through his life, he talks about the God of my father. He does not talk about my God. And even when he is 130 years old, he still talks about the God of my father Isaac when he first comes down into Egypt. But now, at 147, he's dying, and he's made it. He gets there in the end, in the very end. Chapter 49, verse 24, he says to Joseph, "The God of your father." In other words, God is my God. He'll help you. And he says in verse 25 of chapter 49, "The God of Jacob." It's like a kid with a new toy. He keeps on playing with this idea. Your hands will be made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From thence is the shepherd, maybe looking forward to the Lord Jesus, the stone of Israel. Israel is Jacob. So finally, he gets there. He accepts that Yahweh is his God. And I'm sure he was brought to that conversion, as it were, by the grace of God that was manifested through Joseph. And yet, although he gets there, as you read through this, it's quite clear that he is still a long way away from real spiritual maturity. In chapter 48, we have this whole business of him trying to insist that Ephraim, the younger son of Joseph, is to be blessed as the firstborn. He wants to switch it round. Of course, he was not the firstborn, and he had struggled with Esau, his brother, who was the firstborn, to get the blessing of the firstborn. He had deceived, really, Esau over the stew to get the birthright off him, and then he lied to his blind father Isaac to get the blessing that was appropriate to the firstborn. And he sort of had learnt the lesson a bit, because after all that angst over it, when Isaac sends him away from Esau, he says, "Look, son, I give you the blessing of Abraham." And it was the blessing of Abraham that was all important, God's blessing, not the blessing that goes with the firstborn. And when he finally meets Esau, after he's leaving Laban, he says to him, when he comes to him, he gives him a great big presents, and then he says, take away. The AV just says, "Take my blessing." But the Hebrew is, "Take away my blessing, because I have got all things, and God has been gracious to me." He just wrestled the night before with the angel. He felt that having God's grace meant that I've got everything. That's all things. I'm accepted by God. God has shown me his grace. I don't want the blessing of the firstborn. Look, Esau, take it away. I give it back to you. So he reaches that peak of understanding then, at that point. But now, in his old age, he is still, at the very end of his life, still on about this thing about, oh no, the secondborn has got to get the blessing of the firstborn. He has not totally learnt the lesson. And it's the same with us. You can come to a point in your life, particularly in a point of crisis, where you really get it. For example, that all material things, material blessing, is nothing. But I've got all things because I've got God's grace and God has been gracious to me. But then a few years later, you slip back into that old concern about material blessing. Or whatever it might be, you might knock some addiction on the head and get over it and then slip back years later. And Jacob, I think, failed in this. But he without doubt is going to be in the kingdom. And another indicator, I think, that he doesn't get exactly to perfection is that pretty well his last words are that he wants to give the special blessing of the portion that he took from the Amorite. He says, "With my sword and with my bow." Now, of course, his brother Esau was the guy who used his sword and his bow. But he somehow wanted to say, I got that in my own strength and I'm giving it to you. And what a shame, because in the Psalms it seems to pick that up and says, we got the land in possession, not by our own bow and not by our own strength and not by our own sword. These are the very last words of Jacob when he talks about how he has gotten the land in possession by his own sword and by his own bow. This is 48 verse 22. I've given to you one portion above your brothers, which I took out of the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow. Psalm 44 says, we did not get the land by our sword and by our bow, but by God's grace. So here's the thing. When you and I come to die, and we shall die at some point, or the Lord shall come in our lifetimes, we will not have attained that spiritual maturity which I think he intended for us, and yet we shall be saved still by grace. You see it more clearly, I suppose, in the deaths of others whom you know, have not got to spiritual maturity. We shall be changed. This is the great message of 1 Corinthians 15, that there shall be the resurrection of the body and we shall be changed. It's not just that our physical nature, as it were, shall be changed from mortal to immortal. There is going to have to be a change of our personality. Of course, it is so that who we are today, in a sense, is who we shall eternally be, and that is a scary thought. But then, who is perfect? Who has cleansed themselves? Who has put on the mind of Christ totally? Not one of us. And so, you know, this opens up a conundrum that we can discuss, I suppose, afterwards. But to what extent, then, shall we be changed more than physically? To what extent will our characters be cleansed? There has to be some element of that, because we all die imperfect. And as I say, Jacob died visibly, clearly imperfect, and still didn't quite get there on at least two issues that we've just discussed, and there were many more. And the same with a lot of characters who you meet in the Bible, and of course people you meet in your own life, and of course ourselves personally. We all die, they all died, far away from that, I think, point that God foresaw we ought to have gotten to. Now, if we recognize that, then in this life we are not going to be so demanding of our brethren. Look, this is the standard, you're not reaching up to it, are you? So therefore, I think less of you, therefore, even I shall disfellowship you or get out of our church or whatever. No, because we shall all be changed. This is grace, and we find grace hard to accept, both in our own lives. You see this again here in this account, how when Jacob dies, the brothers still can't quite believe Joseph's grace, and they think he's going to kill them, and he's like, no, guys, I love you. I'm not going to do that. I love you absolutely. Even though Dad's dead, I'm not gonna kill you now, am I? I gave my life to trying to save you. And it's that struggle that we have in the end, to believe that the gospel, the good news, is really true for me. But this is faith. This is trust, which is what faith really means, trust in his grace, that he will save me, despite my imperfection.